Again, we're well past the half-hour break, and we do expect that the Senate Judiciary Committee will gavel in as soon as the senators walk in the room. Of course, we want to show you that. There is a demonstration taking place outside on Capitol Hill. This is a demonstration opposed to Judge Brett Kavanaugh. Fox News is reporting that Judge Kavanaugh...
Well, welcome back, everyone, to TYT's coverage of the Kavanaugh and Ford, Dr. Blasey Ford's their testimony hearings today. In front of the Senate today. I am now, of course, J.R. Jackson of the Young Turks. I am now joined by Adrienne Lawrence. You guys may have seen her once. She was also on the main show. She's an attorney and legal analyst. She worked in Washington representing members of Congress. So we have some serious expertise here today to help us break down what's going on, possibly the approaches that are happening, and the objectives that we see, of course, members of the Senate making, and the special counsel, they're calling her, special counsel Rachel Mitchell. She's also a prosecutor for seemingly being the Republican side, because she's speaking for a lot of the male constituents. So thank you, first of all.
Thanks for having me.
For doing this. We came a little bit late. We're supposed to be in here at 10 Pacific, but I think they're still on the break, so we at least get a chance to talk about what we've seen already and where you think this is going. How do you think Dr. Blasey Ford is doing?
Blasey Ford, she's coming off extremely credible. And also in terms of a humanistic element, she is also coming off very vulnerable and like she doesn't have any motive. And so that's been kind of a tricky situation for the special counsel Mitchell, who's coming off more of a almost a calculated sphere. But the problem is she's also going down avenues and pathways that really aren't fruitful at all in terms of getting information.
I did notice that I was looking for some of the, I guess, the approaches or the way that she was trying to do her job, which was people had their assumptions about what she was going to do to discredit her story, Dr. Blasey's story, and also give some more credence to the line of questioning that many of the male congressmen or actually senators wanted to ask her. As you said, she wasn't doing that. But first off, your background is being, as an attorney, you did do some trial stuff, too.
Yes, that's correct.
So in doing that, do you see, what approach would you have taken if you're in this position to do this kind of thing?
So Rachel Mitchell, she's in a tough position because generally you can sit with the witness in advance and ask questions so you know the answer to those questions. Because as a litigator, when you're kind of going up against an opposing witness, you want to know the answer to the questions that you have. Mm-hmm. And in this situation, they don't have that. So Rachel Mitchell's going down these paths, trying to find nuggets that she can kind of, you know, infiltrate, and that will make Blasey Ford look, you know, just not believable and kind of, you know, pick apart her story. And unfortunately, the avenues that Mitchell's going down, they're just not helpful. And so she's kind of in a situation where, honestly, she kind of looks silly.
What is it that stuck out to you from this first, I guess, couple hours now? We're looking at almost 1:30 Eastern time, and they started picking this up at 10.
Yes.
What is it that stuck out to you? Some moments, because you've been watching, obviously, the whole thing.
Yeah.
What is it that stuck out to you? I know we've heard from Cenk and Ben, I don't know if John was in here today, about what stuck out. I'd like to see from your perspective what you saw that was a big deal.
I would say that the Republicans using Mitchell and also their kind of interrogation, it just doesn't look good for them. I do believe Blasey Ford's coming off extremely credible, without a motive necessarily. You know, her speech patterns are very consistent in who she is. Also, we saw her tear up a bit at times. And so she's very personable, very humanistic, relatable. Also, she just doesn't come off as calculating. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the Republican members of Congress are coming off as calculating. Mitchell kind of has a very direct, almost an overbearing attempt to relate really hard, and to the point where it just seems very calculated, yeah, as opposed to a natural flow of I'm connecting with you and you with me.
I'm looking forward to seeing, well, not for the sake of that, but because of what we're seeing, the testimony so far, when Brett Kavanaugh comes in, what his approach is going to be. Because, of course, obviously he's watching. It's like you're next on the stage with the bright lights to basically get interrogated about your role in this.
Yes.
But then also after seeing this, I'm actually looking forward to seeing what he's planning on saying, if it's going to be an attack mode, which, of course, I'm not sure if he's getting counseled by President Trump in any way, because we would have actually, we can assume what he would advise him to do. Or if he's getting a more softer tone, like, you know, I believe something happened to her, but it maybe wasn't me. What is the, I'm trying to guess what the approach could be from him to say it wasn't me anymore, because there was a report this morning, as I woke up this morning, that they said two other guys came forward and said it was them. Oh, my bad. No, it was them, but the morning of the testimony, it was us. I try not to just shun things immediately, but I shunned that immediately.
Oh, I know. It seemed like complete and total nonsense. Mm. And it's just really unfortunate because, as you know, the Democratic members of Congress had really seemed to want, very much so in the Senate Judiciary Committee, an FBI investigation would be appropriate here. There's no reason why they should not have had that. We need information. We need facts. Why is it that GOP and Trump don't want us to find out what really happened? It's one of those, Senator Blumenthal, he had pointed out, he's like, the lack of an FBI investigation, it's tantamount to a cover-up. And yeah. I couldn't agree more. You know, any lawyer or legal scholar or anybody kind of worth their salt knows the FBI is a fact finder. They'll go and get information from you and you can make that conclusion and deduce from it what information you can. Why aren't we in possession of that information? Because not only does it put Blasey Ford against Kavanaugh, and it becomes a he said, she said when it doesn't have to be. And so it just, it's so unfair to the American people not to have this information now before this man possibly is appointed to the Supreme Court.
What would be the best approach? Because we've talked about this on the main show as well. The approach from this standpoint of being called, you're just trying to object, you're trying to delay the process. The reason you brought this up so late was so you can push back the nomination of Kavanaugh rather than actually get to the bottom of it. Because, of course, the as we've seen, as you pointed out, the FBI investigation from a lot of the Democratic senators coming in saying that, hey, this should be delayed because of that. And it's a valid point, in my opinion, because if you want the truth, you want the truth, right?
That's right.
But the opposing role is saying, how come you want to pull this up so late to make sure it happened? And is this politically positioned or timed out to make sure that his process is delayed? Now, my thought was, it's okay if you assume that about me, because there's plenty of other things that Judge Kavanaugh represents and has legal beliefs on that I would oppose.
Yes.
So even if these accusations didn't come up, there's plenty of things to dispute about him.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's not like you necessarily even needed this to have something to have against him. So I guess the question was whether or not there's a major leg for Democrats to stand on, or is that really a shot to their credibility?
I think there is definitely a leg for the Democrats to stand on. And it really seemed like there were enough questions about him initially, which we're going to see more of it. But, you know, when he was before the Senate Judiciary Committee before, he was very evasive with his answers. Also, not providing all of your history and background and information. There have been a lot of questions about his financial transactions that he's done. So it's kind of this is an added layer of almost questions about this man that we should have the answers to before he is appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court, especially in light of his viewpoints in terms of executive privilege and whether Trump, you know, can be impeached.
That's true.
And so there are so many things here that are just, they're just so questionable about him that we as the American people shouldn't have to deal with. It's, you know, and I'm not, I grew up in a Republican, Democrat household. I am very, very bipartisan because I just don't care. I'm about doing the right thing, whatever the circumstances are. I don't care what party or leaning you have. And just to see also very much how the legal community is like, no, this isn't right. Like, I miss Scalia. At least Scalia had, he was honest and direct, even if we didn't necessarily believe in his truth. He had truth, and he was forthright with it.
Do you believe this is a layer of the Supreme Court, at least an era of the Supreme Court that has an extra layer of politicization to it? Because before, like you said, okay, we would know a lot of what many of the justices believed, and we'd have stark disagreements with some of them.
Yes.
Or agreements. What has changed to allow to have such a political nature to it that you basically, I was mentioning this with confirmation hearings. It's like, it doesn't matter what he says, because if we discover later that he's lying, which we did about other confirmation hearings for other positions, it just doesn't matter.
So, it matters.
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter as far as them being in the position. So you can lie during the process. Really? Then once you confirm, they go, oh, yeah, that was nothing that he said he would do or previously said he believed in.
I understand
but there's no consequence for that lying. So Did that usher in this era of just don't say anything, just sit through this 3 or 4 days of being grilled and say, I don't recall, I don't know, I don't recall, I don't recall, I don't know, I don't recall, and then get confirmed and have at it?
And that's that. That is the thing in terms of, you know, because the Senate Judiciary Committee, they are the first line of defense, so to speak. And so the fact that they're allowing this to go forward and to not put more pressure on the president to nominate someone else, it just speaks volumes. Because I think, okay, so like how I mentioned Scalia before, he and Ruth Bader Ginsburg were very, very close friends. There's a respect there. Even though we don't agree on, you know, our ideology and legal nuance and, you know, as a jurist, I still respect you as an individual because you are qualified to be here. And that's the thing with Kavanaugh. There's so many holes in his story. I don't think he's qualified or fit in character to be here. And that's the problem, because you need someone who is trustworthy and isn't responding to political leanings.
But, like, who's responsible for that? We know groups like the Judicial Crisis Network. They're putting several million dollars into this confirmation. But there's other groups that help push forward certain nominees. So when the president comes in and nominates someone for the Supreme Court, he just doesn't have a list in his head. When he was campaigning, President Trump doesn't have a list of judges in his head because he's a legal scholar and follows all the appellate justice judges and sees what their rulings are. No, he's not that guy.
No,
so there's other people who actually choose these nominees. And then they present it to him, and then maybe he makes the final selection from the 5 or 10 in front of him. So it's those people that are also part of it, because there's this figurehead of the president who is this guy who is, in my opinion, deplorable.
Yes.
And so he does all this, but there's people who are propping him up and allowing him to give him these decisions. So it's not just him who have these beliefs or don't care about this guy's background at all.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part of what's changed. How do we reverse that? It's like when we identify a part of the problem, I'm thinking, how do we change it back now?
Yeah.
Is it possible?
It's crazy unfortunate, too, just because how the system has created this political arm and making the judiciary more political. And we're really just moving in that direction, because, like, as we saw those decades ago when Earl Warren was put on the bench, he was a hardcore Republican. You know, he really seemed like he was going to go in the direction that the Republicans thought he was, and he just went, you know, rogue. He's, you know, Miranda v. Arizona in favor of, you know, arrestees' rights and individual rights and Brown v. Board, and he got all of the entire court together and just ushered in all these decisions that made civil rights just so much more robust and better for people who are marginalized and disenfranchised. That showed you that he cared about the system. He cared about the country. He cared about our nation and the mores we have and the principles. Nowadays, it is a politicized system where you have fewer and fewer justices who care. Like Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I believe she cares. There are a number of justices I believe actually care, and they're not trying to politicize the system or do something that's for the best of maybe their own limited arena of constituents for when they decide to retire.
Which I guess was the original reason for the lifetime appointment, so that you wouldn't be to a particular party.
That is absolutely
Instead
right.
Now, the lifetime appointment is there so that you can influence the court for decades to come without any fear of being called out for it, having any consequences for it, or being told. I don't know if it's a social media thing, if they follow Twitter. I always wonder how many people in this high position of power, like if you're a Supreme Court justice, how often do you follow Twitter and go, man, I can't believe John Smith in Arkansas said that about me. Like, do they follow that closely?
It makes me wonder. I agree with you. If they have some fake accounts and they're like defending themselves. No, but you're absolutely right. Like,
someone.
I swear, which I think is beautiful, I just think that a true jurist for the Supreme Court is somebody who's loyal to no one but himself.
Mm-hmm.
And like Scalia was like that. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is like that. There were these old school players who were just like, nah, forget you. I don't need to. I'm not loyal to you. I'm not loyal to your boys. I'm not loyal to my boys. I am loyal to me. And that is what we need of a jurist, someone who does not care and who isn't trying to politicize the system. The only problem is we now live in a world where you don't get somewhere unless you, you know, stroke the right folks.
Right.
And so as opposed to being just good at your job and what you do and actually abiding by the qualities, the characteristics, and the fitness of that role, it's now of what can you do for me? I'm going to put you in that position to make that decision. And unfortunately, with Trump being such a proponent of that and helping his friends out, we got problems.
This is awesome. You should, I don't know the process, But we're going to get you on the road to become a Supreme Court justice one day.
Hey, speak it.
I'll vote for it. So it appears that they are settling back in. Dr. Christine Blasey, I think I called her Blasey earlier. I apologize. Blasey Ford is sitting back in. We'll be able to listen, and we'll be here listening and breaking it down. Let's, I'll wait for them to speak, but if you have any thoughts, you can let me know, too.
Cool.
We're always
Dr.
up.
Dr. Ford, you tell me when you're
Chuck
ready.
Chuck Grassley.
I'm just organizing my papers. I'll be ready in
take as long as you need.
20 seconds. Thank you. I'm ready.
Okay. Senator Hirono.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, is it your intent to cede all Republican senators' time to your prosecutor rather than they themselves ceding their time to her?
Yes.
We all know that the prosecutor, even though this clearly is not a criminal proceeding, is asking Dr. Ford all kinds of questions about what happened before and after, but basically not during the attack. The prosecutor should know that sexual assault survivors often do not remember peripheral information such as what happened before or after the traumatic event. And yet, she will persist in asking these questions, all to undermine the memory and basically the credibility of Dr. Ford. But we all know Dr. Ford's memory of the assault is very clear. Dr. Ford, the Republicans' prosecutor has asked you all kinds of questions about who you called and when, asking details that would be asked in a cross-examination of a witness in a criminal trial. But this is not a criminal proceeding. This is a confirmation proceeding. I think I know what she's trying to get at. So I'll just ask you very plainly, Dr. Ford, is there a political motivation for your coming forward with your account of the assault by Brett Kavanaugh?
No, and I'd like to reiterate that, again, I was trying to get the information to you while there was still a list of other...
Thank you.
...what looked like equally qualified candidates.
And yet they're not here to testify. Dr. Ford, I'd like to join my colleagues who have thanked you for coming forward today. And I and we all admire you for what you're doing. And I understand why you have come forward. You wanted us and the American people to know what you knew about the character of the man we are considering for a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. I want to take a moment also to note the significant personal sacrifices you've made to come forward to share your traumatic experience with us and the American people. You've had to move, you've had death threats, all manner of basically re-victimization experiences have come your ways. But by coming forward, you have inserted the question of character into this nomination and hopefully back into American life, and rightly so. We should be made to face the question of who it is we are putting in positions of power and decision-making in this country. We should look the question square in the face, does character matter? Do our values, our real values about what is right and what is wrong, and about whether we treat our fellow human beings with dignity and respect, do they matter anymore? I believe they do. And I believe the reaction we have seen to this coverage right now and your courage all over this country shows us that we're not alone. You're not alone. That women and men all across America are disgusted and sick and tired of the way basic human decency has been driven from our public life. The president admits on tape to assaulting women. He separates children from their parents. He takes basic health care protections from those who need them most. He nominates and stands behind a man who stands credibly accused of a horrible act. I again want to thank you for coming forward. Mr. Chairman, I ask unanimous consent that on 6 items consisting of various statements, letters, fact sheet, posts are inserted into the record.
Is that one request or you want me to wait for 6?
Well, I have six separate items.
Okay.
Because I can go over them for you.
Okay, no.
I would like to...
Let me not interrupt you. Okay. Your request is accepted without objection.
Thank you. And I would like to read from an item that has already been entered into the record, but this is from a letter from the National Task Force to End Sexual and Domestic Violence. The letter states, and I quote this letter, "This moment has become a crucible. It's a test of our progress. Do we start by believing victims of sexual assault and treating them with dignity, or don't we? So far, Senate leaders are failing that test, prejudging the outcome of the hearing, sympathizing with her perpetrator, attacking her credibility. They send a message to every victim of sexual violence that their pain doesn't matter, that they do not deserve justice, and that for them, fair treatment is out of reach. This will only serve to drive victims into the shadows and further embolden abusers." Once again, Dr. Ford, thank you very much. This is a moment for our country. Mahalo.
Senator, Ms. Mitchell for Senator Crable.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
When we left off, we were still talking about the polygraph, and I believe you said it hasn't been paid for yet. Is that correct?
Let me put an end to this mystery. Her lawyers have paid for her polygraph.
As is routine.
As is routine.
Dr. Ford, do you expect the price of that polygraph to be passed on to you?
I'm not sure yet. I haven't taken a look at all of the costs involved in this. We've relocated now twice, so I haven't kept track of all of that paperwork, but I'm sure I have a lot of work to do to catch up on all of that later.
I get you have a lot going on, and you've had that for several months. But is it your understanding that someone else is going to assist you with some of these fees, including the cost for your polygraph?
I'm aware that there's been several GoFundMe sites that I haven't had a chance to figure out how to manage those because I've never had one.
And I'm sorry,
done for me.
Several what?
GoFundMe sites that have raised money primarily for our security detail. So I'm not even quite sure how to collect that money and how to distribute it yet. I haven't been able to focus on that.
Okay. In your testimony this morning, you stated that Senator Feinstein sent you a letter on August 31st of this year. Is that right?
August 31st. Let me see. I sent her a letter on July 30th. And I don't have the date. I'd have to pull up my email to find out the date of her email to me saying that it was right before the hearings that she was going to maintain the confidentiality of the letter.
Say that again. It was till right before the hearings?
That's my memory, but I can look it up for you if you would like the exact date. I could pull it up on my email.
Oh, yeah, I want to make sure.
Date, counsel?
I want to make sure I understood what you said.
That document's been turned over to, in response to a request for documents. You have it.
Thank you, counsel. I want to make sure I understood what you said. Was it your understanding it was going to be kept confidential up until right before the hearing?
It was my understanding that it was going to be kept confidential, period.
Period? Okay. Between your polygraph on August the 7th, and your receipt of the letter from Senator Feinstein, did you or anyone on your behalf speak to any member of Congress or congressional staff about these allegations?
I personally did not.
So my question was, did you or anybody on your behalf?
What do you mean? Did someone speak for me?
Somebody that is working with you or helping you? Did somebody at your behest, on your behalf, speak to somebody in Congress or a staff?
I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not sure how those exchanges went, but I didn't speak to anyone.
Okay. Is it possible that somebody did?
Something that I think is kind of interesting. Mitchell doesn't seem to be focusing a lot at all on the attempted rape. And I'm getting the sense, unless they approach it later, that they may not approach it because as she provides less detail about it, there are fewer things that Kavanaugh can refute or has to come up with explanations for. So essentially, Kavanaugh is probably prepared to respond to her statement and just provide limited information with which, you know, address the things that she had in her opening statement. And so by virtue of not asking Blasey Ford any questions to get more detail, it's less he has to refute or to come up with reasons to refute. So that's kind of what I think.
So it's kind of a time waster right now.
Yeah, they're just wasting time because now Kavanaugh already has his
prepared remarks,
statements, his version of the events. And
that's all they want to have is that and not anything else. No more details to come forward because the beginning stuff was pretty damning and it hurts, especially with the two exits to the house and how it came up with the counseling session. All that was... because that's previous to this happening. That's like changes to her house based off of her experience. You can't, how do you fight with that?
Yeah.
You know, unless they say, hey, we're gonna take a picture of your house, you're lying, you have one front door. But
like the actual event that he was a part of. By not getting any more details on that, then they're essentially, he's already gonna have his prepared response.
They've already closed, what's it called? When they've closed the case, not closed the case, but they've like rest, they've rested.
They've narrowed it, so he's essentially gonna be prepared to refute what she has to say. And he's not going to be hit with anything he didn't know, which is why it's on the Democrats to ask more details about the actual attempted rape.
If they recognize that, that would be a good thing to do.
And your attorney, hopefully Kamala Harris, though.
Did you provide that letter to anyone else?
No.
Do you know how that letter became public?
No.
After that letter was... made public or leaked, did you reach back out to the Washington Post?
I reached out to the Washington, well, they were continuously reaching out to me and I was not responding. But the time that I did respond and agree to do the sit down was once the reporters started showing up at my home and at my workplace.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Ford, thank you for being here.
So as we were mentioning before, just for a second ago, once we were just down, Adrienne was saying that she hopes that potentially some of the Democrats will start saying this. And I was looking to see if some of them will not, because we're seeing a continuing thing where it's, yes, we want to talk about her courage and how inspiring she is and how the FBI should and would normally investigate something like this before we go on. And it's cool to get that in because that's very important. And also to point out how much the Republicans don't want that to happen, and their approach to this whole thing has been and dismissive has been. That's fine to say because we're showing the tenor of, or at least the temperature that's in the room. I'm fine with that. Do that for the first 2.5 minutes. Second 2.5 minutes, make sure you get some more details. And but you don't want to sound like you're also trying to dig into the salacious, disgusting actions that took place that night too.
Yes. Yeah. Agreed.
There's a line you still have to toe.
You've had to engage security to some expense. You've had to deal with incredible challenges. And what's amazing, and I want to join my colleagues in thanking you for your courage and bravery in coming forward, all to help us deal with one of the most important obligations a senator has, to advise and consent on one of the branches of our government, the highest courts in the land, an individual going before a lifetime appointment. And you even said that the president had a lot of folks on that list, and your fear was that this individual who assaulted you would ascend to that seat. That's correct, right?
Correct.
Yes, and it is correct that you have given a lot of resources, taken a lot of threats to come forward, correct?
Correct.
Assaults on your dignity and your humanity?
Absolutely.
How has it affected your children?
They're doing fairly well considering. Thank you for asking.
And your husband?
Doing fairly well considering. Yeah, thank you. We have a very supportive community.
That's good to hear. I want to use a different word for your courage, because this is more, As much as this hearing is about a Supreme Court justice, the reality is by you coming forward, your courage, you are affecting the culture of our country.
Okay, so real fast.
We have
also there's a wonderful about the line that a lot of times Democrats have to toe. Is there's a political nature to this. Of course, there's like we're in our own, everyone's in their own particular bubble. Folks who feel like they don't believe anything that Dr. Blasey has to say, Blasey, how much she has to say, they're going to be in that bubble. Maybe we're in the bubble of seeing the reality of the situation and pointing that out. So I think sometimes Democrats have to make sure that you're also showing that it's not a concerted effort to say the same several things over and over and over again, because when folks that are predisposed to not even listen to you will go, hey, they just keep saying the same thing. They must not have anything credible to say. They must be out here trying to set this up and lie on our guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you still have to have a certain line. It's a political game because you're trying to convince the public of your point of view in a way. So you don't want to keep going with the same thing. And I'm not sure if this is what he's still doing, but it's kind of been the approach.
Because what you're doing for our nation right now, besides giving testimony which is great, to one of the most sacred obligations of our offices, is you are speaking
but they need to get into substance.
Yeah.
They
really
do.
This country needs to understand. And how we deal with survivors who come forward right now is unacceptable. And the way we deal with this, unfortunately, allows for the continued darkness of this culture to exist. And your brilliance shining light onto this, speaking your truth, is nothing short of heroic. But to the matter at hand, one of my colleagues, who I have a lot of respect for, and I do consider him a friend, went to the Senate floor and spoke truth to both sides of the political aisle. Senator Flake said yesterday, this is a lifetime appointment, and this is said to be a deliberative body. In the interest of due diligence and fairness, her claims must be fully aired and considered. I agree with him. But you've asked for things that would give a full airing, from corroborating witnesses to be called. You've submitted to an intrusive polygraph test. Can you answer for me, how do you feel that all the things that could have been done thoroughly to help this deliberative body have not been honored in this so-called investigation?
I wish that I could be more helpful and that others could be more helpful and that we could collaborate in a way that would get at more information.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to introduce for the record seven letters from Lambda Legal, from Mormon Women for Ethical Government, youth-led organizations around this country, the international unions, bricklayers, allied craft workers, a letter from 295 survivors of sexual violence in support of Dr. Ford, and a letter from 1,600 men, it's a campaign, in support of Dr. Ford, and those who want to assert, men and women, that survivors of sexual violence are not opportunists, do not have political axes to grind, but are coming forward with courage and with heart to speak their truth and try to end the scourge of sexual assault and violence in our country.
Without objection, so ordered. Senator Tillis, Ms. Mitchell for Senator Tillis.
Let's see if it goes back to more small, minute details.
Yes.
Or not even about the actual.
Dr. Ford, in choosing attorneys, did anyone help you with the choice on who to choose?
Nonsense. Wow. Nonsense.
Various people referred me to lawyers that they knew in the Washington, D.C. area.
Because what if she says,
so,
I got a lot
you know,
of help from so-and-so.
This area, so
Dianne Feinstein told me to do this. Senator Whitehouse told me to do that. And they got what is apparent that they're looking for. What does that do? Does that even help say she does fall into this?
No, it's because they're trying, number one, they're just wasting time, again, because they don't want any new details for the rape to come out that Kavanaugh's not prepared to answer since he's only prepared for her written statement. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they're just trying to look for some kind of connection to political leanings, just to try to find, does she have a motive as opposed to just sharing the truth and speaking the truth so people know the character of Kavanaugh? And it just, it's coming off really silly almost, because part of me is like, the senators easily could have asked these questions. Like, no, and that's why I'm like, this is all nonsense.
First request an FBI investigation.
I guess when we first started talking about the possibility of a hearing, I was hoping that there would be a more thorough investigation.
Would that investigation have been something that you would have submitted to an interview?
I would be happy to cooperate with the FBI, yes.
Would you have been happy to submit to an interview by staff members from this committee?
Absolutely.
Besides, you mentioned some GoFundMe accounts. Besides those, are there
any other? It was a both thing, but also that was a question that she had already broached earlier, which is, again, they're just wasting time. She made herself available. She explained to the extent of why she wasn't available. Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that some of my team is working on a pro bono basis, but I don't know the exact details. And there are members of the community in Palo Alto that have the means to contribute to help me with the security details.
Yes, you've seen it for the polygraph.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's all...
Now this is payment for representation, I guess.
I can deal with that. Both her counsel are doing this pro bono.
Pro bono,
exactly. Not being paid, and we have no expectation of being paid.
Thank you, counsel.
That's exactly how it should be.
Have you seen any of the questions that I was going to ask you today?
No.
Have you? You've been asked a few questions by other people as well. Have you seen any of those questions in advance?
No.
Have you been told them in advance?
No.
And likewise with my questions, have you been told my questions in advance?
Definitely not.
Okay. You mentioned about some possible information, such as when Mark Judge worked at the supermarket. I want to ask you about someone else. You mentioned that there was a classmate who was really sort of the connection between you and Brett Kavanaugh. Who was this person?
I think that case with Mr. Whalen, who was looking at my LinkedIn page and then trying to blame the person, I just don't feel like it's right for us to be talking about that.
I'm not trying to blame anybody. I just want to know who the common friend that you and...
The person that Mr. Whalen was trying to say looked like Mr. Kavanaugh.
Okay. How long did you know this person?
A couple of months we socialized, but he also was a member of the same country club, and I knew his younger brother as well.
Okay. So a couple months before this took place?
Yes.
Okay. How would you characterize your relationship with him both before and after this took place, this person?
He was somebody that we use the phrase I went out with. I wouldn't say date. I went out with for a few months. That was how we termed it at the time. And after that, we were distant friends and ran into each other periodically at Columbia Country Club, but I didn't see him often. But I saw his brother and him several times.
Was this person the only common link between you and Judge Kavanaugh?
He's the only one that I would be able to name right now that I would like to not name, but you know who I mean. But there are certainly other members of Columbia Country Club that were common friends, or they were more acquaintances of mine and friends of Mr. Kavanaugh.
Okay. Can you describe all of the other social interactions that you had with Mr. Kavanaugh?
Briefly, yes, I can. There were, during freshman and sophomore year, particularly my sophomore year, which would have been his junior year of high school, 4 to 5 parties that my friends and I attended that were attended also by him.
Okay. Did anything happen at these events, like we're talking about, besides the time we're talking about?
You can answer that question, then I'll go to Senator Harris. Go ahead and answer that question.
There was no sexual assault at any of those events. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yes, those were just parties.
Or anything inappropriate is what I'm asking.
Well, maybe we can go into more detail when there's more time. I feel time pressure on that question.
Okay.
Yeah. Senator, I'm happy to answer in further detail if you want me to.
I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish answering your question.
Oh, okay. Did you want me to describe those parties? Or
should we leave this to the next round, Mr. Chairman?
Answer the question.
I'm just happy to describe them if you wanted me to, and I'm happy to not. It's just whatever you want.
Maybe this will.
Whatever is your preference.
Cut to the chase. My question is, was there anything else that was sexually inappropriate, any inappropriate sexual behavior on the part of Mr. Kavanaugh towards you at any of these other functions?
No.
Okay.
All right.
Senator Harris.
Dr. Ford, first of all, just so we can level set, you know you are not on trial. You are not on trial. You are sitting here before members of the United States Senate's Judiciary Committee because you had the courage to come forward because, as you have said, you believe it was your civic duty. I was struck in your testimony by what you indicated as your intention when you first let anyone associated with these hearings know about it. And what you basically said is you reached out to your representative in the United States Congress, hoping that person would inform the White House before Judge Kavanaugh had been named. That's extremely persuasive about your motivation for coming forward. And so I want to thank you. I want to thank you for your courage, and I want to tell you I believe
you. I think it's so important for her to open with that statement.
And I believe many Americans across the
country. Because it goes against the notion that this was done for political reasons. Trump hadn't named Kavanaugh as a Supreme Court nominee yet.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more.
You told your husband and therapist, two of the most intimate of your confidants, and you told them years ago about this assault. You have shared your experience with multiple friends years after that and before these hearings ever started. I know, having personally prosecuted sexual assault cases and child sexual assault cases, that study after study shows trauma, shame, and the fear of consequences almost always cause survivors to, at the very least, delay reporting if they ever report at all. Police recognize that. Prosecutors recognize that. Medical and mental health professionals recognize that. The notes from your therapy sessions were created long before this nomination and corroborate what you have said today. You have passed a polygraph and submitted the results to this committee. Judge Kavanaugh has not. You have called for outside witnesses to testify and for expert witnesses to testify. Judge Kavanaugh has not. But most importantly, you have called for an independent FBI investigation into the facts. Judge Kavanaugh has not. And we owe you that. We owe the American people that. And let's talk about why this is so important. Contrary to what has been said today, the FBI does not reach conclusions.
Yep.
The FBI investigates. It interviews witnesses, gathers facts, and then presents that information to the United States Senate for our consideration and judgment. This committee knows that, in spite of what you have been told. In 1991, during a similar hearing, one of my Republican colleagues in this committee stated, these claims were taken seriously by having the Federal Bureau of Investigations launch an inquiry to determine their validity. The FBI fulfilled its duty and issued a confidential report. Well, that could have and should have been done here. This morning, it was said that this could have been investigated confidentially back in July. But this also could have been investigated in the last 11 days since you came forward. Yet that has not happened. The FBI could have interviewed Mark Judge, Patrick Smith, Leland Kaiser, you and Judge Kavanaugh on these issues. The FBI could have examined various maps that have been presented by the prosecutor who stands in for the United States senators on this committee. The FBI could have gathered facts about the music or the conversation or any other details about the gathering that occurred that evening. That is standard procedure in a sexual assault case. In fact, the manual that was signed off by Ms. Mitchell, the manual that is posted on the Maricopa County Attorney's website as a guiding principle and best practices for what should happen with sexual assault cases, highlights the details of what should happen in terms of the need for an objective investigation into any sexual assault case. It says, quote, effective investigation requires cooperation with a multidisciplinary team that includes medical professionals, victim advocates, dedicated forensic interviewers, criminalists, and other law enforcement members. The manual also stresses the importance of obtaining outside witness information. You have bravely come forward. You have bravely come forward. And I want to thank you because you clearly have nothing to gain for what you have done.
The infirmities in the process.
You have been a true patriot in fighting
Senator,
for the best of who we are as a country.
Really good at clearly laying things out. And I think it's important to do that because in her statement, she really does, I guess, debunk a number of misconceptions that people on the right have in regard to this hearing and these accusations.
Ms. Mitchell.
Dr. Ford, we're almost done. Just a couple cleanup questions, first of all. Which of your two lawyers did Senator Feinstein's office recommend?
The Katz.
I'm sorry?
The Katz firm.
Okay. And when you did leave that night, did Leland Kaiser, now Kaiser, ever follow up with you and say, hey, what happened to you?
I've had communications with her recently.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about like the next day.
Oh, no. She didn't know about the event. She was downstairs during the event, and I did not share it with her.
Okay. Are you aware that the three people at the party besides yourself and Brett Kavanaugh have given statements under penalty of felony to the committee?
Yes.
And are you aware of what those statements say?
Yes.
Are you aware that they say that they have no memory or knowledge of such a party?
Yes.
Do you have any particular motives to ascribe to Leland?
I guess we could take those one at a time. Leland has significant health challenges, and I'm happy that she's focusing on herself and getting the health treatment that she needs, and she let me know that she needed her lawyer to take care of this for her, and she texted me right afterward with an apology and good wishes and et cetera. So I'm glad that she's taking care of herself. I don't expect that PJ and Leland would remember this evening. It was a very unremarkable party. It was not one of their more notorious parties. Because nothing remarkable happened to them that evening. They were downstairs. And Mr. Judge is a different story. I would expect that he would remember that this happened.
Understood.
And he should be testifying.
Exactly.
Judge should be part of this.
Senator Harris just questioned you from
although
the
he may not remember,
Maricopa
they did
County
this often.
Protocol on mm-hmm. sexual assault. That's the paper she was holding up. Are you aware that, and you know, I've been really impressed today because you've talked about norepinephrine and cortisol and what we call in the profession, basically the neurobiological effects of trauma. Have you also educated yourself on the best way to get to memory and truth in terms of interviewing victims of trauma?
What kind of question
for
is that?
For me, interviewing victims of trauma?
No, the best way to do it, the best practices
trying to say
for
you know how to tap into that area of your mind that's missing pieces, so why didn't you do it?
Would you believe me if I told you that there's no study that says that this setting in five-minute increments is the best way to do that?
We'll stipulate
we
that.
We can stipulate. Thank you, counsel.
Agreed.
Did you know that the best way to do it is to have a trained interviewer talk to you one-on-one in a private setting and to let you do the talking, just let you do a narrative? Did you know that?
That makes a lot of sense.
Does make a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And then to follow up, obviously to fill in the details and ask for clarification. Does that make sense as well?
Yes.
And the research is done by a lot of people in the child abuse field, two of the more prominent ones in the sexual assault field are Giesel and Fisher, who've talked about it. And it's called a cognitive interview. This is not a cognitive interview. Did anybody ever advise you from Senator Feinstein's office or from Representative Eshoo's office to go get a forensic interview?
No.
Instead, you were advised to get an attorney and take a polygraph. Is that right?
Many people advised me to get an attorney. Once I had an attorney, my attorney and I discussed using the polygraph.
And instead of submitting to an interview in California, we're having a hearing here today in 5 minutes.
They're acting like Republicans didn't rush through this and force this as opposed to going through this process in steps. And you could have asked her to submit to this kind of interview. Give me a break.
Exactly.
Like, this is ridiculous.
Thank you.
If you are coming forward with allegations, serious allegations against a Supreme Court nominee, it makes all the sense in the world to make sure that you have representation, that you have a lawyer on your side, because you are about to get dragged through the mud. And the fact that she did the polygraph test, by the way, her lawyers advised her to do that because her lawyers knew that people were going to accuse her of lying.
That's right.
Dr. Ford, without objection, I'll enter in the record.
Mr. Chairman, I have something for the record as well.
By the way, in that line of questioning also touched on this idea that, hey, you know, you didn't come forward with these accusations earlier. Why is that? Why did these accusations come out now?
Mr. Chairman, I have three letters.
Such a tired talking
to both
point.
You and the ranking member, and I'd ask that they be entered into the record.
Without objection.
And it's also my understanding that Mr. Judge is not willing to come forward to answer our questions. As a result, we cannot test his memory or make any assessment of his thoughtfulness or character. And I think that's why the failure to call him to testify is so very critical. And I hope the majority would reconsider that.
Okay. Senator Blumenthal.
Mr. Chairman, I ask if you have sworn statements that you're submitting for the record that we have those individuals come before us so that we can ask them questions about those statements. I think that the nature of this proceeding would be compromised if we lack an opportunity to ask them questions about sworn statements that will be part of the record. So, frankly, Mr. Chairman, I would object to entering them in the record.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Whitehouse.
I have a number of letters that I would like to ask submitted to the record that relate to the importance of proper investigation by trained professionals in pulling these kind of investigations together, from the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, the National Women's Law Center, the National Organization for Women, and so forth.
Without objection, order, Senator Kennedy.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for our chairman. The statements that Senator Blumenthal talked about, those were statements taken by our majority staff.
They're already in the record.
Yes, sir. But those statements were taken by our majority staff?
Yes.
Did minority staff participate?
No.
Why not?
You'll have to ask them.
Well, were they instructed not to participate?
Yeah. No.
They chose not to?
That's right.
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
And if I could, I still think I have the floor, Mr. Chairman.
Let's listen to Senator Feinstein.
Can we be excused?
I am.
The witness is quite tired.
Staff.
I would
like to, if you'd wait just a minute, I'd like to thank Dr.
Okay.
Ford.
All right.
In fact, we're going to continue this meeting, and we can. So let's just be nice to her. Dr.
Let's
Ford,
be nice to her. That's
Dr.
rich.
Dr. Ford, yeah. I can only speak as one of 21 senators here, but I thank you very much for your testimony, more importantly, for your bravery coming out and trying to answer our questions as best you could remember. Thank you very much. We'll adjourn for 45 minutes. Not adjourn, recess for 45 minutes.
Okay. So I think, at least from what I'm seeing from reporters via Twitter, is a little bit of panic coming from the Republican Party. There's quite a bit of panic apparently coming from Trump himself. It's been reported that he is angry with White House aides for not notifying him about how credible Dr. Blasey Ford would sound.
Yeah.
And so there are two things that stood out to me when it came to her credibility. First, Republicans and people who identify as Republicans who are not politicians, like Chris Wallace, they talk about her credibility and they seem inclined to trust her a little more. And I'm wondering why that is. So first off, her testimony is, of course, persuasive.
That's right.
But I can't help but notice that there's a difference in how they're treating her credibility versus how Anita Hill was treated during the Clarence Thomas case. And I'm wondering if it's because they can relate to her a little more.
Yeah.
And so when she started answering questions or when she had her opening testimony, she mentioned how her summers were usually spent at the country club. And you know what I'm saying? I just feel like there's a little bit of relatability with Dr. Blasey Ford that I don't think would be the case with, let's say, a woman of color or someone who might be from a lower socioeconomic status, maybe someone who doesn't have the same pedigree or same Ivy League education. It's just something I wanted to point out. And again, this is just my perspective and what I'm kind of seeing with this. I wanted to get your perspective on that as well.
I think you're absolutely right. That relatability element, in part her being a white female and also of the same stature, it's one of those things where you know, those members of Congress, in terms of the white men, at least, they can kind of see her as, oh, that's my mom, that's my wife, that's my sister. Mm-hmm. And also in our society, white women are generally afforded this aspect of vulnerability and a sense that they should be protected and taken care of and that they can be victims as opposed to black women. We are not afforded that same kind of level of almost human qualities and wanting to protect. And Blasey Ford, she was amazing in terms of her credibility because she comes off very innocent. Like there were times I smiled in part because she doesn't answer the question that's asked of her. Mm-hmm. She answers sometimes like questions that are total tangential. And you're just kind of like, why does she do that?
Mm-hmm.
But then you realize, I don't think she's calculating at all, but it's almost an innocence of, oh, well, let me go ahead and let you know that wasn't the question I was asking. And yet she was so natural and she didn't understand. I think maybe the question corroboration or something. Mm-hmm. It almost showed that lack of ability to be calculating, to have ulterior motive, because she has this innocence about her that she doesn't know what these terms mean. And also she has this low voice that's just so like almost sheepish and just very sweet.
Yeah, she does have a sweet voice. You're right about that. But one other thing that I wanted to kind of point out was what Kamala Harris said in her statements. She mentioned how this is not a trial. And it is being treated as a trial by the Republicans. Now, at the same time, Republicans refused to get the FBI involved, and their accusation, or I should say their excuse for not getting the FBI involved, is because they don't do criminal investigations. This is not a federal crime. Okay, so A, why are you treating this as if it's a trial? You're getting a female prosecutor involved, you're hiding behind her skirt because, you know, those Republican men, all of which serve the Republican side on the Senate Judiciary Committee, don't want to lose the political points of you know, appearing harsh toward a woman who is alleging sexual assault. But another thing is, okay, so you're going to treat it like a trial. You don't want to get the FBI involved because the FBI doesn't do criminal investigations. This is not a federal crime. But no one asked for a criminal investigation.
That's right.
The FBI, and there is precedent for this. This is exactly what happened in the Anita Hill testimony or trial. I shouldn't say trial, the Anita Hill accusations. FBI did get involved and they did a more thorough background check.
That's right.
And that is something that Dr. Blasey Ford wants.
Yes.
She wants that. She wants Mark Judge to testify.
Yeah.
These are things that the Republican Party, specifically Republican senators, have refused to do. And I think that that speaks volumes.
Yes, it does. It's almost an acknowledgement of the fact that she's telling the truth. Because who wants an investigation into a matter that they're claiming occurred if they're lying and it didn't occur, especially with the FBI? Come on, they have a lot of, you know, weapons that they can use. And so it is pretty remarkable that the you know, GOP can really take this stance of, no, we're not going to investigate it, especially if they say they want the facts to come forward. My God, you're not even allowing anybody to gather facts.
Right, because, look, I want to be clear about something. I want the FBI to get involved and people think I say that because I want to prove that Dr. Blasey Ford's accusations are true. No, no, I just want to get to the bottom of the truth. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want Kavanaugh to be dragged through the mud or smeared if he didn't actually do these things that he's being accused of doing, right? I want to know what the truth is. Now, I'm inclined to believe the accusers. And one of the reasons why I'm inclined to believe them is because Republicans have been running from investigations. Yes. They've been running from, you know, certain giving enough time for the hearings to include other women who have accused him. Like, there are certain things they don't want Mark Judge involved in you know, the questioning of what occurred that night. It's just, it's all very strange to me. It seems like they don't want to get to the bottom of the truth, and that makes me believe the accuser more.
Absolutely. And one thing I was thinking of, because we have this situation where all of Kavanaugh's Georgetown prep classmates, they've all agreed collectively not to talk on the record. And it just really shows to me that there is this kind of joined effort to protect and to silence, and everything that happens at Georgetown Prep stays at Georgetown Prep and nobody finds out. It just screams that there's something illegal going on here, or there is really bad stuff that's gone on here. And so realizing that so many individuals from Georgetown Prep or whatever, that they end up as members of Congress, or they're their sons, or they're their family members or whatnot, it just speaks even more as to why the GOP doesn't want anybody digging into what actually went on. And because it could lead to more. That's just something that I bear in mind.